ladies? Wow, it's the last meeting of the year. I'm privileged to be here. We've been married coming up on 35 years. So yeah, before some of you were born. That's kind of a scary thought. But anyway, it's good to be here because I always like being back to MOPS, and it kind of goes so fast. I just remember meeting with the leadership team talking about this starry-eyed theme, and now here it is behind us. But who doesn't want to come to these meetings? You eat and get prizes. I mean, man, so very cool. But yeah, it's always good. And I know some of you I don't. So as already been said, my name's Mark. I've been in this town for 23 years. We raised our kids here, went through all the school systems, and kind of understand a little bit about San Clemente, and hopefully can share a few things with you this morning. You know, it's kind of funny. Every generation gets an identification. My generation, we're called the boomers. You may have heard of us. We're the 50 to 60-year-olds. And then after us became the Gen X, and that was the big thing, the Gen X. What are the Gen Xers doing? And they're kind of the 40 to 50-year-olds, 30 to 40-year-olds pretty much. And then, of course, there are the millennials, which are 20 to 30s. And the youth of today, they're calling them the Gen Zs. So, and what's funny, when you look at all those labels, really the only one that seems to have a negative connotation today is the millennials. When people talk about the millennials, oh, those millennials. And it usually has to do with those entitled millennials, those spoiled millennials, those lack of work ethic millennials, those narcissistic millennials. And what's funny is the people that are saying that are the boomers, the ones who raised the millennials. And so if you're going to blame anybody for this cycle or this generation that's self-focused, you have to point the finger at the boomers. You have to say, what did they do wrong? What happened there? What took place? If we're going to stop that cycle from continuing, you don't really look to the millennials. They're proof of something that took place. And let me suggest this, that our generation was one of the first generations to just start to depart from the perfect parenting manual, which is called the Bible. And we started to embrace other perspectives and other things, and we're living the fruit of that today, depending on if you believe, you know, how broad-reaching, quote, the millennial issue is. And so I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about that, hold up the mirror on our generation, but also bring you back to the parenting manual that I believe is the best one, because God created our kids, God created us, and so it seems like He would know how best to do that. So I've given you a little worksheet here this morning. I've entitled it Stop the Cycle, and we're going to look at how to avoid raising a narcissistic brat. How to avoid raising a narcissistic brat. I wrote a blog on this once, and I think Jill grabbed it and said, you need to talk on that. So that's what we're going to do here today in the brief time we have. I'm going to be looking at two Bible verses. But the first one, let me give you a little background if you're not familiar with the Bible, comes from 1 John. It was written by the Apostle John, a follower of Jesus. And he was writing to Christians. And he was writing to Christians that were deceived. They had embraced a type of thinking that wasn't right, it wasn't godly, and it wasn't helpful. And so he wrote in 1 John 1, verses 8 to 9, he says this, he says, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, He, that's God, is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So the deception he was highlighting that they were thinking about, talking about, was they could some way get to this place of sinlessness. They could be good enough, they could work on their stuff enough to get to a point where we're all good people. And he says, don't be deceived, basically. It's not true. All of us are sinful. All of us blow it. All of us fail. And that's the reality of it. And once you face that reality, he says, if you go to God and you confess that, then God will forgive you. But he didn't say go to God and God will make you a better person or make you perfect or sinless. So he's highlighting deception, but he's also getting the remedy. Now, if you look in other parts of the Bible, Romans 3:23, it says that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. If you look at Ephesians 2, it talks about how we're born with a sinful nature. There's nothing we can do. We can't help it. Think about it. Think about your children for a second. What do you have to teach them to do? You have to teach them to be good little boys and girls. You don't have to teach them to be bad. You have to teach them to be honest. You don't have to ever instruct them on what it means to lie and how to lie. It's in our nature. It just comes out. And so we're constantly trying to help our kids be good. But the reality is there's a faultiness in us, adults and kids, and that's the reality of what it is. So here's the deal. What's the implication of this truth? Well, the more we can learn about our stuff, our falling short, our mistakes, our failures, the more we'll understand what to do with that. The more we'll learn about ourselves and how to respond in ourselves. So in many ways, it's a very teaching tool, because even in 1 John, when he was talking about don't deceive yourself, you're a sinful person, and when a sinful person really gets that, then it drives them to God. But if they don't really get that, they'll never be driven to God. Well, that can happen on so many other fronts. If we really get this about ourselves and we help our kids get this about themselves, it will not only drive them to God, but it'll help them adjust and make sense of life today. And so when we talk about how to avoid raising a narcissistic brat, if you're taking notes, maybe jot this down real quick. I put it this way: help your kids embrace failure. Help your kids embrace failure. Help your kids see how failure is their schoolmaster. They can learn a lot by understanding who they are and who they aren't. They can learn a lot about themselves, about humility, about faith, about God, about empathy, about forgiveness, about hard work. And the more you shield your child from that, and don't allow them to see that of themselves and other people, the more you will be deceiving them. The very thing that 1 John was warning against. I was thinking about it too. I was thinking about, wow, because I'm watching hockey right now, and you know, of course, there's basketball playoffs and all this, and they always interview the players at the end of the game. And it's interesting that even the players that lost. And when they do the interview, that it's like almost the response. You could almost write the response. It's exactly the same. Well, we just have to regroup. We have to get back to our basics. There's a lot to learn. We got to shore up some of our weaknesses. We got to work on defense. Now, why were they thinking like that? Because they lost. See, there's something productive about failure that can teach us about life, about people, about God. And here's the deal, celebrating's easy, that's simple. There's nothing to learn. But when you fail, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn. In fact, I would venture to say that you'll only succeed in life if you fail. That's the only way you really learn. That's the only way you really will get better. Not as a better person necessarily, but get better how to navigate, better how to treat one another. And honestly, when you think of narcissism, when you think of self-focusedness, when you think of it's like it's all about me because I'm so good. But when we fail and we experience that failure, that's humbling. That starts to reduce our self-value, if you will, which can be very, very healthy. So this is a challenge. You've heard the term helicopter mom, right? Don't be a helicopter mom. Well, by definition, what is a helicopter mom? A one that protects their kids from ever feeling hurt, pain, failure. It swoops in the name of wanting what's best for your kids. Because think about it. How many of you want your child to struggle physically, emotionally, relationally? Nobody does. Nobody wants that struggle. Now, let me ask you a follow-up question. How many of your kids will struggle physically, relationally, emotionally? So when you don't allow them to do that as a young age, you're deceiving them, you're not preparing them for when that actually happens. There's no training. You're going literally from the bench to the playoffs without any practice in between. But it's hard, because as parents, it feels better not to allow your children to hurt. But if you can put it through the lens that actually you're hurting them down the road when you prevent that from taking place, it will be better in the long run. Does that make sense? It's kind of this catch-22 thing. And this is honestly where boomers messed up. Because we embraced the new psychological movement that talks about self-esteem, self-value, positive reinforcement, and we became more concerned about being our kids' friends than we did the parents. And the authority figure got reduced because that felt better, because now your kids aren't crying and leaving the room and saying, I hate you. Nobody likes that feeling. And instead of, you know, any kind of discipline that caused a tear, we do a timeout, and we do five more minutes, and we do five more minutes, and we do five more minutes, and ultimately there's no effect. And that's where we slacked. So put this here. I got a couple suggestions on what this looks like, how to help your kids embrace failure. You ready? That was number one. This is 1A. Allow the freedom to win or lose. This is going to be how you help your kids embrace that failure. Allow the freedom to win or lose. In other words, don't insulate them from falling short or messing up. This has application at school, doing their homework. This has application on the teams they play on, intervening for them with the coach. This has applications for relationships they encounter, intervening with the kids. This can even have application to go on vacation. Yeah. Well, we can't be away from our kids that long. Why not? They'll struggle. And your point? See, if you always appease to a struggle, guess what? They're always going to struggle. It's kind of like going to the gym. If every time you get to the point where you're sweating, you stop, you're never going to get in shape. So part of that is a learning process. I hate to say it. Me and my wife didn't struggle with this part. We went on vacation for how many weeks? 2 weeks and left to what? Home? 6-month-old at home. Now that today you'd be arrested for abuse. And you know what's amazing? It's really amazing. They handled it. They weren't institutionalized. There was no crimes committed. They're balanced. So the tension here will be for you. I'll just tell you, it'll be for you. You're going to have to work through this allowing them to fail. You're going to have to be able to be comfortable with seeing them. It's the night before that paper's due. They haven't worked on it at all. And you know they're going to get an F because it won't be done in time. You're going to have to struggle with not swooping in, pulling out the computer, getting that paper done, and rescuing them. But guess what you just told them? You just taught them by that F, and believe me, they will get into the college later. This is in second grade, so it's not a problem, you know, that whole thing. But by what you've told them is, don't worry about time management. Don't worry about having to do it on your own. I'll always be here. But if you let them go, then they're going to learn themselves, I can't do that again. I messed up. I got to figure out how to control that and make sure that doesn't happen. Give room to think, to process, to respond. It's how we grow up. Don't rob them of that experience. Okay, second thing, 1B. Don't redefine failure as success, because it isn't. Failure is failure. And this is where we kind of, the boomers, started kind of the participation trophy syndrome, is what I want to call it, where everyone gets a prize, everyone gets a trophy. I remember my daughter. I remember she played on a basketball team. And, you know, she was downright terrible. She was not a basketball player. She was terrible. And yet she got a trophy at the end of the season for the most improved dribbler. You know what I mean? They're just like trying to come up with it. Like, just give every, why? Because we want everybody to feel good. Well, here's the reality. Some people are good and some people aren't. Some people succeed and some people fail. That is real life. And so what we started doing was insulating them from real life. And then we wonder today why, quote, a millennial, millennials, broadly speaking, feel self-entitled and feel like their first job, they should like it and always have to succeed and assume they'll always be a millionaire. The question is, will you like the path getting there? Well, why? I grew up and I got a trophy every time I blinked. Look at my room. See? So we started that, but it's not true. So don't make second place first place, because it's not. Don't change the rating system. It's painful to come in second place, but there's a lot to learn there that can drive you to first place. So, yeah, I remember, you remember Brennan's swim coach? I loved it. She was straight up. He came out, our youngest went to swim lessons here in San Clemente, and I think after the first lesson or maybe the second lesson, she goes, he needs to pick another sport. Terrible swimmer. It's like, it's best counsel we ever got. It's absolutely true. He ends up being a hockey player, and he was a great player and everything. Swimming was not his thing. So, don't redefine failure as success. And then C, install and enforce consequences for sinful behavior. It's critical to clearly communicate expectations and consequences. And these includes rules in the home, expectations for school. Try it best to create a reality in the home that is mirrored in real life. So those kinds of consequences. I remember, again, holding up the mirror for the boomers. You know, we raised our youngest. He went to public school here. He's 23 today. So he was in high school 5 years ago, 6 years ago. You know, we tried to have a curfew, you know. We're going to have a curfew, and there's going to be consequences for this curfew. It's pretty amazing. Of all his friends, 16 years old, no one had a curfew. So it was pushing against culture. He became the goofy guy that had to leave by 11. And everybody's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know, we told him, you know, you get so much money a week, you know, and this is what you get. So budget, learn to budget. All of his friends had credit cards. So he'd come home with brand new clothes. Well, guess who bought them for him? His friends. Yeah, or he got their used ones because they were throwing away a pair of shoes that he'd kill for. So sometimes you're pushing against culture to do this. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you what happened. You talk to my 23-year-old son today, and he'll look back and say, yeah, he said, my friends were spoiled. My friends, you know, it's funny today, boy, they don't even know what work is. They don't even know what, so, but during the time, it was really hard. Dad, do I really got to be home? Mom, do I really, mom, you know, my friends don't. You know, why can't I have a little more money? You know, so it's not easy. But that's the real world. The real world is if you go to a job and you're 10 minutes late, you get a warning. You do it twice, you're out. The real world is you got to live on your own. You got to budget your money. We all have to do that. That's the real world. So the more you can get your home to mirror the real world, As far as expectations and consequences, the more you will be helping your kids. Now, it's all part of helping your kids embrace failure because they'll mess up. Five-minute syndrome, that was a big one too, avoiding the consequences. We invented that one. Five more minutes for the next hour. Come on in, five more minutes. Do we have to? Okay, five more minutes. Then you go, where are you? Come on in. Okay, five more minutes. Pretty soon, five more minutes is meaningless. So, help your kids embrace failure. Now, let me just warn you in your little discussion time here, the big part of that is help yourself embrace failure. You'll have to work through it yourself first. You'll have to be okay with tears. You'll have to be okay with pushback. It'll be a learning curve. I mean, you get there one step at a time, but at least it's a way to head. Second verse I want to share with you, and we'll wrap it up, Philippians 2:3. The text says, and Paul's writing from a prison to a church in Philippi, that's the Philippians piece, and he says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Wow. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Now, this would be the antithesis of narcissism, just this verse. To step into the truth of this verse is to step out of a narcissistic way of thinking and perspective. Because in reality, humility is the opposite of what? Pride. And pride is the fuel for narcissism. The text says, love others more than yourself. That confronts self-absorption. The text says, be interested in others more than yourself. So that's the opposite. It's the opposite. It's kind of the death blow. So if we talk about how to avoid raising a narcissistic brat, number two, help your kids to value others. Help your kids to value others. Your children will naturally value themselves, as we all do. That's our sinful nature. But the goal is to get them beyond themselves, to learn to value others. And this is going to be teaching, humility, empathy, care, and love. Dr. Bushman, who's a professor of psychology at Ohio State, found this. He did a study and he found this. He said, people with high self-esteem think they're as good as others, whereas narcissists think they are better than others. And so stepping into this Philippians 2:3 thing is key. It's key. We used to, when our kids were growing up, we used to take them to a nursing home right over in Capitol Beach and just walk the halls and pop in and see these, you know, it's one of those places where you check in but you don't check out kind of thing. And so they just are sitting, old people are sitting in their beds and some have visitors but some never do. And so we would just randomly walk into rooms with our kids and say hi. And of course, they're loving the fact that somebody's in there to say hi. And you start a conversation, my name is this, these are my kids, oh, and of course, you know, you bring the kids and they just love the little kids and all that, you know. And so so we would do that, but at the beginning it was really freaky for our kids. It really pushed them past their comfort zone. The old people were freaky to them. Some of them had strokes, so they, you know, were like that. And, you know, they're like, whoa, you know. And we used to say, hey, we're going to go to the nursing home and, you know, visit people and, you know, just trying to get them out of themselves. And there would be pushback. Ah, we don't want to go to that place. It's hot in there. It stinks. And, you know, just kind of this whole thing. And then we just say, we're going. And 9 times out of 10, we'd come out of there, they would be changed. It'd be like reflecting, like, gosh, Evangelina, man, that must be lonely to be in there, to have a family and don't come down and visit you. Or that guy was an airline pilot, and wow, now he can barely talk. That must be really, you know, they were getting out of themselves. They were starting to feel empathy. They were starting to understand people's feelings beyond who they are. And so it's cool, even to the point where we would start praying for them and we would leave and they'd say, we got to get back there sooner. We go like twice a month, like once, you know, on Sunday afternoon, we do it twice a month. And we'd leave and they'd say, we got to get back there. I mean, she can't sit there for 2 weeks with no visitor. But you know what happened? After about 3 or 4 days, we'd bring it up. I don't want to go there. It's hot. It stinks. It was back to the thing. So it's something that you really have to push hard on. And so let me just give you a tip here. In order to help your kids value others, think of it in terms of you. For you to value somebody else, in this case, count others more significant than yourself, that's going to require a cost. It's going to require a cost. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you discomfort. That's just what it is. To get out of ourselves and to pour into somebody else and to start to under that, there's going to be a cost associated. And so understanding that in the beginning, I think, is very important. So let's talk through some practicals. How can you help your children? And I know some of you have really young kids, but as they start to grow older, how can you help your children get out of themselves for a birthday party that they're going to? Okay? Well, how about they buy the birthday gift or a portion of it? How about you make them fill out the card? You get them involved. Rather than buy the gift, buy the card, sign their name, hand it in. So that gets them thinking about this person. It gets them thinking about what to buy this person. And if they're going to spend money, now there's a value. Now, if they're eight, back to the boomers, okay, us. Our son, I'll never forget, my youngest, he's about 18 years old. He came home. Oh, it was after Christmas. That's right. And two of his buddies came over. Hey, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Hey, what's up, what's up, what's up? And, what'd you get for Christmas? I spun it. I said, what did you give for Christmas? You know what two of those guys said? Nothing. I said, you didn't get anybody anything? Mm-mm. Never have. That's boomers raising millennials, and then we're sitting here saying, self-entitled, whatever, whatever, whatever. So the earlier you can do that, birthday parties, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Christmas, make them step into it. Make it cost them something. Now, let me just say right now, didn't have this wired when we were raising our kids. A lot of this is hindsight for me, too. So these are just kind of tips, learning the hard way. Taking time to write a thank you note to uncle, aunt, grandma, grandpa, who gave them a financial gift. Make them get on the phone and call and thank them verbally. Doing chores, cleaning up after themselves for free. See, then they're contributing at home and investing in others. Helping a sibling, helping a friend, caring for someone disabled. This, again, will require patience and pushing. Now, as I said, I'm not a parenting expert, so some of this is reflection back and thinking, oh, could have done that better, could have done that better. But God is a parenting expert. And so I just want to encourage you that this is not about doing it perfectly, but it's about just heading in the right direction. That's all. Because you will fail. We all fail. That's how it goes. But parenting is a gift, and it's an amazing gift. And you all are celebrating that gift. And I applaud you for being here and sticking through MOPS for the whole session. Because I know you're here not only to get a break, but you're also here to learn some tools and how you can better care for your kids and hopefully break the cycle if there is one to be broken. But if you want extra on this, I encourage you to pick up John Roseman's book called Parenting by the Book. Parenting by the Book, John Roseman. You can get it on Amazon. He has an ebook. Psychologist guy that uses biblical principles. And it's a great tool that maybe you can read throughout the summer and have some more. So before I let you go for your discussion time, I just want to pray for you, and thanks for having me. Let me pray. Lord, as all of these young women, moms, have a wonderful gift that your word says are like arrows to be pointed. We just pray for wisdom for these moms and dads that aren't represented here, but I know are represented in the home, to have your wisdom on how to care for their little daughter or little son, or both. And I know each child's different, Lord, as you uniquely make them, and there are different challenges for each child. Every personality is different, so we know one size doesn't fit all, but your truth, Lord, has application for everyone. And so give them wisdom on how to help and allow freedom to take place. And when failure takes place, it'll be a real learning tool for them and help them and prepare them for a productive life, and that they can get outside of themselves and care and love other people. Lord, I know every mom wants that for their child. And so just give them wisdom on how to do that. Pray for the discussion time that it'll even help them be vulnerable and honest, and maybe some adjustments that need to be happening. But please protect them. Please bless them. Please keep them. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.